So you are in your sixth term here in North Carolina, in the House of Representatives. So, how has the session been going so far? Is there any difference so far to how things have been in the past, for instance?
First of all, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate that. It's
Absolutely.
always good to come visit WCQS. And I would say that, yes, the session is a little bit different in maybe two or three ways. One is that we've had some stops and starts due to weather, like the schools. It has sort of felt like school days lost in the session because we had some days for ice lost in the session in the very beginning. One morning I woke up to my parking lot covered in ice where I stay when I am in Raleigh. So, yeah, a few days lost for snow. Another difference that is interesting is that we have a new speaker who is new to the job. Not new to being a representative, but new to the job of speaker. And I think a subtle but important difference is that he is not running for higher office. If you will recall, your listeners may recall that the former speaker, Tillis, was running for the U.S. Senate practically the whole time he was Speaker of the House in North Carolina, which I think sort of it's took his focus maybe somewhat away from the job at hand, but I think Speaker Moore is really trying to attend to this job and be responsive to it. We'll see where his priorities are as the session moves along.
Are you pleased so far with kind of the signals that you're getting from Speaker Moore?
Well, you know, we're still in the bill filing process. I will say that whereas many bills that were would have been filed last in the last biennium were referred directly to rules, many of the bills being filed this year by the minority party are at least being referred to committees. Now, whether they will then be heard in committee is just another thing yet to be seen. I think they're beginning to hear bills pretty much, but bill filing deadline, the final deadline is the 14th of April, and then crossover comes early in May. And so I think we will see how many bills are actually heard and actually make it across to the Senate.
Well, now, so you're actually the first legislator from this region that I've talked to who isn't a freshman legislator. And so their perspective so far was that they feel like it's going a little slower. Well, at least in the, I think in the case of Terry Van Dyne, who was appointed in the last session, so she had a little experience from before. But what do you think of, do you think the pace has been slower than usual?
Yes, I do. I think some of that has to do with the weather, obviously. We missed some days for snow. Part of it, I think, has to do with a whole new leadership team on the majority side, sort of getting up to speed on what their job actually entails. And then, I don't know, part of it just seems like it may be a little bit less urgent,
Urgent.
maybe.
Oh, I see. Is that just because this is a longer session and there's more time to do
That may be
things?
part of it, but then too, it may be that the majority has sort of settled into the role of being in the majority, and maybe they figure they have more time than they did in the first biennium in majority, where they were passing, you know, getting through one bill after another after another. This time seems to be a little more deliberative and maybe, as I said, less urgent.
Maybe having been out of power for so long, they had
They
time to
felt
build up a lot of
maybe,
things that they wanted to pass.
yes.
Well, so what do you think of the session so far in terms of the priorities of the legislature and what has gotten done and what's been passed?
I am disappointed in the attention that's being paid to, you know, when I said less urgent before, I really think that there are some urgent needs out there that are not being attended to. For example, we are still holding out some hope that Medicaid benefits will be extended in North Carolina, that the governor will maybe come through with some proposal to bring that into North Carolina. But I don't see any clear signs of that. And the urgency of that, of course, is that we have a lot of elderly, a lot of very young children, a lot of disabled and blind folks who are not getting the Medicaid care that they should be receiving. Mm-hmm. So that's one urgent need. Another one that I see, and what we are seeing in some bills that are being introduced by the minority side, are bills that would attend to lower wage earners. We are being told that we are that we have recovered from the recession, but in fact, the recovery has amounted to more low-wage jobs rather than high-wage jobs where people can actually live on what they're earning. And so, for example, we have a minimum wage bill, maybe more than one, that have been introduced by the minority side. And these are bills that have been passed in other states that are known to be more Republican-leaning. And so I would hope that the majority would see these as urgent needs and maybe pick up the pace where those things are concerned. But instead, I think we're seeing some other things take priority. For example, the overlay of districts for voting for county commissioner in Wake County, similarly to what happened in Buncombe County in the last biennium, where we were to make the districts for county commission match those in the House, in Senate, such that more Republicans would be elected to those offices than Democrats. It's those kinds of things that still seem to be kind of taking precedence over the more common needs.
And those new districts are being challenged in court. The lawsuit was filed yesterday.
Right.
Yeah. And it seems like a number of things that have been brought up, especially some of the more contentious issues, are things that would end up getting challenged in court, especially these the magistrate's opt-out bill, which I know you were very outspoken against.
Yes.
The religious freedom bill and all of that. So I know earlier this week, you along with Patsy Kiever and some other people were at a news conference in Raleigh speaking about taxes. Could you tell me a little bit about what the goal of the news conference was?
Well, here again is another, I think, something of some urgency for taxpayers in North Carolina. I believe that as a result of the majority tax plan that was passed last biennium, that there are a lot of average, everyday working people who are seeing a higher amount of taxes having to be paid out of their pockets than ever before. And what we decided to do at that press conference is to call out the governor and those folks who are responsible for a tax plan that actually benefited the 1% and larger companies rather than the average working person and smaller business. They are actually going, they're getting their taxes prepared or they're doing them themselves, and they're finding that they're having to pay much more than they expected to under a plan that was touted as one that would actually result in a savings for North Carolinians. That has not been the case, and we wanted to call that out in a press conference at Democratic headquarters last week.
What are some of those changes? Kind of getting a little technical, but not too technical, but what are some of those changes where people are going to be seeing less coming back as refunds and things?
Well, there are some deductions that are no longer able to be taken. For example, senior citizens were able to take a medical deduction that is no longer in existence. And we have a bill that has been introduced to bring that back. There was the earned income tax credit that no longer exists in North Carolina that we had in our plan that for example, Wisconsin did away with their earned income tax credit and then reinstated it because they saw the damage that had been done to just average everyday folks. And you know, the key to that whole idea is the word earned. These are people who are earning money and paying their taxes, but seeing no benefit at all from having done that.
What were the reasons given to do away with them in the first place?
I don't know, other than that they used the revenue that would be saved from not allowing those deductions to cure other parts of the budget that really working folks could not necessarily relate to.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the goal of this news conference sort of being a call out, Governor McCrory, it almost seems like in this session that McCrory is starting to become more of a centrist, at least in terms of some of the things that he said during interviews, at least in, as far as him almost being at odds with especially Senate leadership right now. Do you think that you being the Democrats in the legislature can find a partner in McCrory during this session?
Well, you know, we have been out there letting him know what we feel needs to happen, what we believe is hurting North Carolina citizens at this point, and that there are things that could be done to change the direction in which the governor is leading North Carolina and his majority party. But it does seem like, I think you're right, that the governor and the majority party seem to be at odds with each other more than in agreement. But that is in word, really, and not in deed. I'm waiting to see the governor actually take action that shows that what he is saying that may sound more centrist is really going to be put into some action.
So you were in the legislature during Bev's governorship as
Correct.
Well. So you've been around for a little bit. What is the difference? Like, I know we're going to be coming up into a an election year, and McCrory will be running for office against likely Attorney General Roy Cooper.
Correct.
So how does that affect whether or not things can get done when in a large way people are going to be posturing, positioning themselves for elections? I mean, I guess that happens every 2 years.
Absolutely. And I think we saw the same thing happening when Tillis was the Speaker of the House and running for the U.S. Senate. I believe he figured that the more he could do to show the extreme side of himself, the better his chances would be for running for Senate. Now, I don't know where Governor McCrory will land on what he believes will look the best to his people, but I would say that it's going to be a really fine line to walk.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think Democrats in Western North Carolina were so successful in an election year when Tillis won the Senate and Republicans largely held on to a lot of what they had in the state legislature?
Well, I believe it is the success in Buncombe was due in large part to a very, very energetic and concentrated volunteer effort. I don't think there is any one person who can take credit for the job done in Buncombe County, but I do think that many of the voters knew the damage that had been done in the delegation that went before, and they were ready to make a change. I believe that what we may be seeing is a little bit of tempering on the part of Republicans to make sure that they don't, you know, lose, you know, more of their folks because of extreme measures. One thing that I had suggested is that we need to bottle whatever Buncombe did and move it around the state because we were really the most successful county in the state. Part of I think what will happen is that, for example, in Wake County, where they are busily passing the bill that passed in Buncombe about overlaying the districts onto the county commission races, if those folks see who is behind that, I imagine that their effort will be similar to Buncombe's in trying to remove those folks from office who have been responsible for that, because it really sort of tampers with electoral freedom when these kinds of things happen, and I think people know that their vote needs to count. And with things like voter ID and with the redistricting and then the further redistricting of local government entities, I think people are going to – I would think they would get just as upset as Buncombe did about it and do something about it.
So you think them changing the way Buncombe County elects its commissioners had a big role
in one of the, them that losing? That's one of several things that played a part.
Interesting. Well, Democrats did really well in that election in Wake County. Obviously, they swept, so they had a 7-0 board majority. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, you know,
in the county commission race,
sure.
Right.
And do the people who wanted to change that have a point in that Republicans had no representation whatsoever on that board at that point, even though they had people come out and vote? I mean, the way they would change it does seem like there's a bit of a partisan edge because Republicans would have been in the majority, but on the other hand, they had no representation on the board at all.
Well, you know, there's always something to be done about that. Mm-hmm. If you want a candidate if you want to run a candidate, put them out there, have them run in the same way that everybody else has to run, and to make the district sort of contrived. And shift them just to your liking, I think is sort of tampering with the system that should, you know, in all other ways work fine. Of course, you know, you might think I would say that just because I knew that the Democrats won in the county commission race in Wake County, but I don't think that would necessarily have been the case. Hmm. They have just the same opportunity to run candidates for those commission seats as the Democrats do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
as far as the Democratic Party having Patsy Kiever in charge, or rather Randy Voller, what sort of changes have you seen, if you've seen any? What do you think having someone from Asheville in charge of the party could hopefully do for this region?
Well, I think certainly for this region, it's a great thing. I think that I have immediately seen a shift in terms of the trust that is coming back for the party at the state level on the part of outlying Democratic parties in the counties. I think that trust level had been eroded somewhat, and with Patsy there, I think that it is really building back. I believe that the strategies that we used in Buncombe County to win the races that we did last election will, with Patsy's leadership, be employed in other counties around the state. Mm-hmm. I think that can be nothing but a plus for us.
So as far as what's gotten done so far, one of the big things, obviously, is the changes to the gas tax.
Yes.
What did you think of that? And obviously, it went through a number of different changes, so you may have one opinion on how it was one time, but as far as what ended up passing and what would you have liked to see if you wanted it to be different?
Right. I really think that what most folks have understood to have happened is that the gas tax was portrayed as a savings for folks, when in fact it turns out that it will be a higher tax in the long run than it would have been had the Republicans allowed the tax to drop to its lowest level. Mm-hmm. I do not deny that we need to find a way to fund transportation improvements and infrastructure improvements in the state. But I think that we need to find other ways to do it that are less regressive, that are more in tune with the needs of working people in North Carolina. This is a tax increase, in my view, and one that I hope that people recognize as such.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say it's a tax increase, mm-hmm. It's a tax increase in the future. If nothing happens, if they don't change it again, although I have heard some legislators say, well, you know, in a year we could scrap this plan if we find another way to fund our roads. And what do you think, what are some of the other ways that we could fund roads in this state?
Well, I've heard folks talk about the highway usage fees. That you might charge, say, a person like myself who drives a hybrid more because we're having to stop less at the pump. We're driving more miles on less gasoline, so that we're not paying that gas tax quite as often or as much. The fact that trucks use the highways more than any other mode of transportation might be another area to look at. But overall, I think what needs to happen is we need to look more at multimodal transportation and making our highways more conducive to pedestrian travel and bicycle travel and then light rail. You know, Governor McCrory was very instrumental in getting a lot of these multimodal transportation ideas going in Charlotte-Mecklenburg. I would love for him to try to get some of that done in North Carolina as a whole. But I'm not seeing any of that, and I don't believe that it's going to get any better by taxing the everyday citizen for just the normal getting themselves to work, getting themselves to school, you know, getting themselves to their jobs every day. Mm-hmm. That's not the way to do it, in my view.
Remind me, I don't remember if this ever passed or not, but when you mentioned the hybrid cars, I remember a proposal a few years back mm-hmm. that would have assigned a fee for someone who bought a hybrid car or an electric car.
Right.
Did that ever happen?
It did not.
It did not. No. Okay. Obviously the argument for that was that they will be paying less in gas
yes.
taxes. What do you think of that idea? I guess it hasn't really come up in this session, but what did you think of that?
Well, I mean, I think that it is sort of, it could work. I think that we are going to have to look at ways that are more equitable, possibly, because there aren't that many hybrid drivers. I don't think, need to be asking them to shoulder the whole burden for transportation costs. But in some ways, people might say that it's sort of a backhanded kind of punishment for people who are trying to be more environmentally responsible mm-hmm. and responsive by, you know, slapping them with a fee. But, you know, I believe that we're all in this together. And just like I don't believe that we should be letting off the people who own yachts and big businesses and large houses, I don't think we should be punishing the people at the other end who are trying to, you know, just get themselves back and forth to work every day.
Mm-hmm. So you've had a lot to do with renewable energy lately, as far as some bills filed. One, I think it would have to do with mountaintop coal mining. Mm. Could you tell me a little bit about that bill?
Yes. I am not the first primary on that, but that's a bill that would prohibit Duke Energy from purchasing coal that had been acquired through mountaintop mining.
Okay. What do you think the prospects of something like that are?
You know, we always hope that this is something that will be paid attention to, but in this landscape, it's difficult to imagine that it would get very far.
I have heard about this new push for solar energy by Republicans, actually, that would allow third parties to sell directly to customers. Do you know anything about that, and are you supportive of that?
That's actually a bipartisan bill.
Okay.
And an interesting little sort of an aspect of this session that I haven't seen before is that there will be these bipartisan bills that are attractive to Democrats as well as Republicans. But if a Republican introduces it, they will ask us to sort of hang back and wait to sign on until the Republicans have built sort of a capacity to keep it going so as not to frighten the Republicans away from the bill. And so what we're seeing is Republicans sort of adopting a lot of Democratic ideas, but sort of saying, but hold back a little bit and don't scare off of our Republican colleagues from sponsoring these bills. It's pretty bizarre, actually. But yeah, that is a bipartisan bill. And it's one I do support, and it would make it so that solar companies could be the direct biller for the energy, and without having this middle person. They would still be paying whatever was required of Duke, but it would be more of a direct buy and sell, such that I believe it will benefit those smaller solar companies that are just getting started in being able to produce more.
Oh, what do you think the chances are of renewing the renewable energy tax credit?
That's certainly a possibility, and I would say that the chances are medium.
Yeah.
Because, again, this is something that I think has been seen as a sensible approach to even some Republicans. What my advice to your listeners would be is to look for those bills that have any bipartisan support in the session to see whether or not they will pass. If they are things that have been originally sort of embraced by Democrats, if there is any bipartisan support, they may have a chance.
Uh-huh.
But otherwise, it's going to be more about Republican legislation.
The optics of these bills is interesting.
It is.
I know that the most recent abortion legislation was brought out by four Republican women. I thought that was a very deliberate move.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you've been outspoken against this type of legislation. What do you think of this new requirement that would mandate 72-hour waiting periods for women and I think effectively prevent any doctors at UNC or ECU from conducting abortions?
Well, it's damaging in many, many ways. I think when you have one of the top medical colleges in the state of North Carolina being told that they can no longer teach a particular piece of their curriculum, that is just is wrong. When you have students who are applying to university or to medical school expecting to receive a certain kind of teaching and they get something altogether different, that's just wrong. Since when are we not allowed the freedom to select a college for what it will teach us? And without limitation, so first of all, the 72-hour waiting period is sort of an arbitrary delay. They know that it's a time sensitive procedure, and that's why the delay. And they also know that and they're playing on the safety idea of it not being safe. Abortion has a 99% safety record when done by a medical professional. There is this push to have only OBGYNs be able to perform the abortion, when in fact there are many family practitioners who have, and that's why the limitation on the UNC school is, because family practitioners come out of the UNC school knowing how to do this. They know the procedure. It's limiting their scope of practice coming out of medical school. And it is telling students that, you know, no longer will you be taught this part of the curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that the reasons for the waiting period, mm-hmm. is they're saying, and I think that, you know, there's a, you know, I think it seems pretty clear from these bills that the overall goal is to have fewer abortions. And so their rationale seems to be that if women have more time to think about this, then some of them will not get abortions. So what do you think about that? You know, you've called this 72 hours arbitrary. And right now we have 24 hours, right? So if a woman wants to get an abortion in North Carolina, she has to go to a doctor and then come back a day later. Mm-hmm. So what do
and
you think of that?
Now it's triple that.
Right, if this passes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that, first of all, let me just say that I am not for abortion. I don't know anybody who is.
Mm-hmm.
But I am certainly opposed to legislators playing, being the doctor in a woman's very personal reproductive health care. This is really just, it goes to sort of being, again, another burden for a woman. You're placing a financial burden. They've traveled some distance to go to the doctor. They go home. They have to go back again. They are, it's both a financial and an emotional burden for a woman to have to delay this procedure that she has, along with her family or her doctor or her whomever she consults with, have come to the decision to do. The other thing that's so disturbing about this is that it limits the consideration for grave fetal anomalies after the 20-week period. If for example, you find at 21 weeks that the fetus has some grave abnormality, you are going to be prevented from having an abortion. There are some really very arbitrary and burdensome pieces to this legislation that I think are all being put out there just to under the guise of making it safe for mm-hmm. women, when it actually has the effect of making it even more of a burden.
Right. And I mean, there's also a physical comfort aspect of it too, because the body at that point is going through a lot of changes early on. Mm-hmm. Waiting 3 days could be just another 3 days of unnecessary pain, it would seem.
Certainly.
And in Asheville, there's no one providing abortions in Asheville yet. Now, we have a Planned Parenthood that just opened up, I know, but I don't believe that they are performing abortions yet. So I think the closest that you can get an abortion may be Greenville, South Carolina, and who knows what the laws are in South Carolina.
Right.
And that goes back to the three-day thing, when you have to go to the doctor and then come back again 3 days later. So that adds up the driving time.
Absolutely.
And then you got to pay more in gas
That's
taxes because
right.
the gas tax is going up.
And maybe you're missing work.
Right, right. So very interesting stuff. So obviously you're very opposed to
yes.
that bill. What do you think the chances are of that legislation getting done? Now, this is another thing where Speaker Moore, I know, is saying that he doesn't want
right.
social socially divisive bills like that?
I mean, what we have heard him say, or at least something to the effect that if it doesn't have to do with increasing the number of jobs in North Carolina, bettering education, you know, whatever, that he doesn't want to have to take the time for the bills that do not do those things. Well, this is certainly one example of a bill that does. It's limiting education. It's providing more of a burden to those folks who are trying to work at a job. And it's certainly not talking about, creating more jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that he will stick to that philosophy and make good on that.
What did you think of his comments on RFRA here in the state? He talked about not wanting to harm the state's brand after what happened in Indiana last week or a couple weeks ago. Obviously, a lot of businesses came down really hard on the state for them passing that legislation. Do you think his comments were an indication that those bills won't come up or that they're just on hold?
You know, it's hard to say. I have wondered if they were just sort of waiting for the things in Indiana to sort of die down and get, you know, less in the media.
Mm-hmm.
But, we do have a significant number of considerations when it comes to laws that discriminate. It's not just about same-sex couples. It's not about, you know, a religious objection to homosexuality. It's about, a religious objection to serving a black person,
mm-hmm.
or a religious objection to serving a woman, or, you know, it could be discrimination at any level. And those are things that, again, we've had ourselves opened up and made vulnerable to lawsuits in North Carolina over the last 2 to 4 years. And I think, again, this is another sort of lawsuit waiting to happen.
Now, were you the primary sponsor of the measure to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment?
Yes, I was one of the primary sponsors.
Okay,
yes.
Gotcha. And and why bring this bill during this session?
Well, there has been a very strong volunteer movement afoot to get the three states that are necessary to get ratification at the congressional level of the ERA, and we wanted to be a part of that. And so that's why we introduced the resolution. And, I think Virginia did the same thing, and they had not been successful. North Carolina, we may or may not be successful in this, but at least, you know, in my view, we have to have the conversations. If we don't talk about these things, then they never get addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, if we do talk about them, we can then uncover those objections to it.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the background on that? When you mentioned the three states that are needed to ratify mm-hmm. this law mm-hmm. At the national level, mm-hmm. What's the background of that? And why are we, explain, I don't think a lot of people understand that this isn't even law yet.
Right. It was almost law. Probably there are a lot of your listeners who know more about this than I do, but we were missing just three states to have the requisite number to ratify the amendment and mm-hmm. make it a part of the Constitution. There was this deadline that was put on getting those states to ratify. We missed that, but now there is some move afoot to extend the deadline, allowing for those, the three states to that are needed to ratify, to come on board, and then, put this to a vote.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I am not as well versed on it as I should be, but I think that it again is something that is moving, that people are talking about, and that especially, particularly with the next generation of young women and young men who are getting active and involved in, you know, the civic lives of their community, I think they see it as something that's important. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping that we're sort of revisiting this conversation in a way that will actually get something positive to happen.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of, that's been made recently of this sort of idea of the two North Carolinas being the urban and the rural? Because it's come up with this sales tax proposal from the Senate with Harry Brown proposing to redistribute sales taxes from urban areas over to rural areas. And then with the push to restore the historic tax preservation tax credit, and also in the incentives debate, the Senate is talking about capping incentives rewards, I believe, for certain areas, including Raleigh, Durham, and Mecklenburg, and places like that.
Are you talking about film?
No, I'm talking about the JDIG.
Those incentives.
Yes, sure.
Gotcha. Business incentives.
Right, mm-hmm. And so. I brought up a lot just now, but as far as the taxes and the incentives and sales taxes, if we could just sort of talk a little bit about that, and what do you think would help out rural North Carolina in a way that doesn't then harm urban North Carolina, which has been talked about?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I believe that in terms of historic tax credits, we've seen smaller rural areas benefit from restoration of old mills and sort of revitalizing their communities in that way. I think that certainly that's something that both urban and rural can benefit from. Mm-hmm. I haven't really studied this issue closely enough to know mm-hmm. why one approach would be detrimental to rural, while another approach would be detrimental to urban. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is that you cannot have one without the other. I think that in order for rural concerns to survive and thrive, they need urban. In order for urban to survive, they need the rural. Mm-hmm. I think there have to be ways that we can have sort of a meeting of the minds and cooperation around mm-hmm. Rural and urban mm-hmm. Concerns.
Now, are you in favor of the incentives that McCrory has requested as far as luring businesses into the state?
You know, I have been for incentives. I think that the approach that has been taken by the Republicans to establish incentives in North Carolina has been different from what we've seen in the past, in that it has sort of privatized, sort of a new sort of granting program, and privatized commerce to a particular degree that is not attractive to me. I think that it limits participation in the program in a way that it hasn't been before. I know that there's a lot of question about where the money will be spent. And I know that before, when I have been in favor of incentives, it's been because we knew that if a business that was coming into the state did not fulfill their end of the bargain, we would be able to, we had clawback measures mm-hmm. in place that would be sure that we got back what we had invested if they didn't come through with what they promised. Mm-hmm. With this program, I'm not sure how vulnerable it makes our state to the plans of bigger corporations.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What do you think? You had mentioned it before, the film incentives. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they have been switched over, like you said, to a grant program.
Yes.
That's much smaller.
Yes.
Than what was been doled out. I know in Wilmington, they are hurting. The film industry there is really scaled back. So that's one example where you can see immediately the effects. But on the other hand, is it a case where North Carolina should be doling out tax breaks to film companies or businesses or anything as far as bringing those states in? Do the benefits outweigh the costs?
No, I think in the case of film, the film industry, we have so much talent in the local areas where these films come to, and it creates so many jobs that I think we have sort of cut off our nose to spite our face in terms of letting go of this kind of incentive program. It's you know, you would find Democrats also who would disagree with me on that. But I do believe that the film incentive particularly has brought some really good jobs to North Carolina, and we have benefited from that. I'm not sure why. Well, I do know that a lot of people who are opposed to this think that the incentive money just goes into the pockets of the highly paid actors and actresses, and that nobody sees anything from this. Well, we've heard over and over again from people on the ground, people who are doing the work in Wilmington and in Western North Carolina, for that matter, have benefited from the work that they've done with the film incentive program. So I am hard pressed to find a reason to be opposed to that particular program.
What about what they have implemented in its place as far as this grant program?
I would hope that if that's the way they're going to go, that they fund it to a degree that will actually attract the industry to North Carolina.
It recently came out more details about this Mercedes plant that went down to Atlanta that North Carolina was hoping for, and we were outbid with incentives by then. I asked Terry Van Dyne about that, and she said they also mentioned that education was a factor in their decision. And that was one of her big areas of concern. What do you think about education in the state, how we're doing? I know schools are struggling, and in last session, the big push was for teacher pay.
Yes. And, you know, I could talk for a long time about the needs of education. And how sort of short-sighted the whole idea of defunding education is, and I'm really sort of half glad in a way that Mercedes said this about the reason why they chose not to come here, because we have been saying this forever, that if you don't have an educated workforce, people, the businesses will not come.
Now, you were on the Asheville School Board, right, before
Correct.
You became a legislator.
Yes.
And how long did you serve
eight,
on? Eight
years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So so you have spent a lot of time in the
yes.
school system, and you know about the needs. Now, this was back 8 years, well, at least six years ago. So what do you see has changed since then? And have things gotten better, or have they gotten worse, or what do you think?
Well, I think that what schools have been really pushed to do is to do more with less. The instructional materials in the classroom have dwindled. Textbooks have not been funded to nearly the level that they were before. They're just being asked to do so much more with so much less. We have voucher program in place where people can get money to put their children into private schools. It's not a full blown voucher program in North Carolina. It's sort of in its beginning stages, but it's one that certainly drains money from the public schools. We have uncapped the charter school limit that has, I think, for all of the quality charter schools that are out there, and there are some very good ones, there are some that have drawn money away from the public, the traditional public schools that have not done very well at all and have been irresponsible and unresponsive in terms of how they've used the public school funds. So it's just an overall weakening of the public schools' ability to do what they were created to do, which is to provide a free and appropriate education to all children. And it doesn't matter, you know, rich, poor, and everything in between. We're supposed to educate all our children. And we were number one. We were top of the heap and the example for many states around the country looked to us for advice on how to do different aspects of public ed. Now we are something like 46th or 42nd or something in what we are doing, both in teacher pay and in funding for things like textbooks and classroom needs. So, you know, it's an obvious short-sightedness, I believe.
And there seems to be I've heard some that are arguing against putting more money into public schools because they are doing so poorly. And it seems like there seems to be this kind of
catch 22 sort of.
How
can you do better if you don't have the funding? And then when you have the funding, you know, taken away, how do people expect you to do what, you know?
Yeah. What did you think of the A through F grading system for the schools?
I believe that it is, again, short-sighted. It is a way to really just point out where the most poverty is in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And we all know that that is, it relates to a school's ability to do what it needs to do to educate children. The less children have exposure to educational materials, the less able they are to pick up what they need to move along educationally. And then at home, if they don't have the sort of reinforcement of those kinds of things at home, then of course they're not going to measure up at the school. It's a real you know, the whole village thing. It's not just up to the schools or the teachers. There are a number of influences on how well a child does.
Are you worried about, were you worried when they lifted the cap on charter schools? And if so, why?
Well, I mean, I guess not worried so much as just, again, concerned that we would lose quality by just opening the floodgates. We want quality schools, whether they're charter schools or traditional public schools. Charter public schools, there are some great ones out there. Traditional public schools, there are some great ones, and there, you know, and in both areas, there are failings. So why would you open yourself up to a watered down version of something? That was my main concern there, I believe.
I know McCrory's budget, which isn't something that becomes law, it gets talked about, and then the legislature does whatever they want, basically. But it's like sort of a starting blueprint, I guess. He called for something like a 1% cut in university funding in his current one. And I know that just from reading the papers that there are a lot of professors that are feeling the same way that you just mentioned public school teachers are feeling, that they're having to do a lot more with less, and they're feeling sort of under siege. What do you think, how are we doing with our universities in the state, and what's the status of them, would you say?
Well, we have been pretty cutting edge in North Carolina, at the university level. I believe that, again, the governor and likely the Republican majority are looking in the wrong places to cure budget ills. If we had not had this huge giveaway in terms of revenue to the top earners in North Carolina and to the bigger businesses in North Carolina, given all of those tax breaks, then we would have the money to fund education in North Carolina, at least to a better extent than we have today. Mm-hmm. And so it's really not about you know, how good or bad the public schools are. It's how responsive should the state be to their needs, mm-hmm. and we aren't being. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is due to misplaced priorities in terms of revenue in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. And I know that the Board of Governors just voted to raise tuition at universities, and so that cost has now been shifted down to the students
and to their parents, mm-hmm. and to the and these are again the middle class, harder. Well, I won't say harder, but middle class working families who are shouldering the burden for the breaks that have been given to the 1% and the large corporate entities in mm-hmm. North Carolina.
There's been a little bit of talk about community colleges, I think, in doing, and I don't have the specifics in front of me, but doing something to provide more money for people to attend community colleges, I believe is what it maybe have been a scholarship. So maybe you shouldn't answer this since I'm not asking the question,
not
right?
Not really sure.
Yeah. But anyway, so, well, let's talk about some of the bills that or some of the priorities that you would like to see. Now, you've talked a lot about mm-hmm. the priorities that you already want, but are there things that you're going to try to push when you guys get back to Raleigh? What are your priorities?
Well, I have a few bills that I have introduced that I think will go at least some of the way toward helping working families make ends meet. And one of those is something called a Healthy Families and Workplaces bill. It's House Bill 270, and it's a bill that would provide paid sick days for family members. We have seen that there are families who can take advantage of the Family Medical Leave Act, and that's certainly good. But there are a lot of instances where workers cannot take time off to take care of other members of their family without losing pay. We know that there are a number of instances where a woman may be in a domestic violence situation where, in order to take care of herself and her family, she needs to be away from work without fearing that she will lose her job. And so this would provide some pay for those folks who need to take that time away from their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
There is another bill that is similar to a bill that was passed in Delaware called the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, and that's House Bill 546, and that would make sure that the workplace would be made so that a pregnant woman could continue to work. It would provide the same sorts of measures that are provided for, say, someone with a disability, to the extent that a pregnant person could stay in their job. There was a Supreme Court case that was won by an employee of UPS, I believe, that had to do with making the workplace surroundings conducive to being able to stay on the job while pregnant. And this bill would do something like that and probably keep us from running into the same sort of court case that happened in the UPS Supreme Court case.
Oh, okay, interesting. What about these? There were a couple bills I think filed this week about requiring police to have cameras on them. Mm-hmm. What do you think of that proposal or those proposals?
Well, you know, I tend to support them. I believe that it probably serves to protect not only the police officer who is in the middle of taking some action, as well as the person who may be perpetrating a crime or not, as the case may be, or as the film might show. The thing that I guess I would be concerned about in the case of cameras on police officers is that how do we know when they will be on and when they will be off? And who what are the rules around that? I would need to know more about what the legislation would actually provide in terms of guidelines for the use of the camera.
And I think in the case of this bill, one was filed that had a lot of detail, like you were talking about, that didn't get as much support because the sheriffs and police chiefs had concerns about the legislature telling them when to do that. And then a separate bill was filed that had less of that, and it garnered more support from them and also from the legislature as a whole. Mm-hmm. So it looks like maybe that's the direction they're taking.
Yeah. There will probably be some compromise. But I think it's just a matter of making sure that both the citizen as well as the police officer are treated fairly.
Mm-hmm. What do you when the budget gets going as that debate gets going? What do you hope the state will fund more of, and maybe fund less of? Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it's a question. I mean, that's kind of a weird way of putting it, I guess, because there's the priorities, obviously, and a lot of it has to do with the way things are taxed. But what do you hope that the priorities will be?
Well, you know, obviously, we need to, in order to have more economic viability in the bigger picture with the Mercedes and the other entities that might want to come here, education is going to be key. And so I would hope that we would get our funding of public education back on track. I also see the health of our citizens as something that is really primary. We are also looking at things like child care subsidies for working families who don't make much at all, but make just a little over the amount that you would make to qualify for a child care, for help with child care. Mm-hmm. And child care is expensive. Mm-hmm. I think what I hope gets more attention in the budget are the things that help everyday working people, and less attention to the top of the heap.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that we have been a little lopsided in what we have made as our priorities, and we need to get back to what really matters, and quality of life matters, environment matters, education matters, healthcare. It's just a matter of getting back to those basic quality of life issues.
Mm-hmm.